Machine, Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Rick, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio! We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
From aluminum foil, where I had this foil lined, in case an alien's inclined to probe your butt or read your mind. Looks a bit peculiar, seems a little crazy, but someday I'll prove. There's a big conspiracy.
Welcome to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's 2 in the morning on the east coast of the United States. I have no idea what time it is down and under, but it is time for Shiny Side Out with Dave and Mecki. So I hope you have your tinfoil hat all made and cinched down tight over your ears. So take it away, Dave and Mecki.
This is Dave.
And Mecki.
Shiny Side Out on WZZR, coming to you from Australia for Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com, where it's home to fresh, unfiltered ideas and also conversations. You'll find those in the chat room and a place to get your merch. And do buy some merch. It's actually pretty cool. A mad painter did all the artwork for them. And you can get them any size.
Great job.
Yeah, yeah, and you can get them any size. So whatever you are, there'll be something there for you, whether it's a mug, a T-shirt, a cap, or what have you. If you're into trucker caps, they got them too. You can catch us on online, on air, and anywhere on your smart device. So grab an app to to listen anywhere or listen at home on a Grace Tabletop Digital Radio. If you missed Solaris's show tonight, you missed a great show. It was the Cyber Witch Cafe with Nish, Montana Jordan, and Solaris, Blue Raven. The topic of discussion today on her show was water fasting, universal awareness, and they opened the floor to more topics. Do you know what? It's crazy, Mackie. The archives are free. They're free. You can become a patron of the station.
So they're not like a dollar?
No. Zero.
That's less than $1.
Yes, it is. In fact, the Greeks wouldn't understand what zero was.
So that's not a lot.
Because they didn't have zero.
But it's fairly cheap, right?
There is no zero in the accounting system, Mackie. Yeah. Because the Greeks didn't have zero, but because the archives are free, you can actually jump in and you can download Solaris' show. You can download all of our shows.
MP3, right?
Yeah, MP3. So you can binge in your own time.
Sweet.
I know. It can't get better than that. So, so we just issue it to everyone on the world, in the entire world, sorry, not on the world. Yeah, I suppose on the world is still a valid point, because we are on it in our own individual respects. We're not in the world, we're not inside it, but off the world, pertaining to or... I've been reading way too much, too many technical documents in legalese. Recently. All right. But having said that, there is a bunch of great host shows, and I do ask that you contribute to the station. You can do it by check, wire transfer, however you wish. You can have PayPal options. There's a ton of ways to do it. But simply, if you want to donate some money, just buy yourself some merch because you're donating at the same time. And you get something for it on top of listening to awesome shows, right? All right. I'm broadcasting out of Dark and Junk Country. Mackie, where are you today?
I'm in Dirac Country.
Excellent. A good place, too, by the way. I've been there. And Mackie and I, with the greatest respect and sympathies, acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land and pay our respects to elders, past, present, and future. Hey, Mackie, I've been ringing around to friends and contact them in the ways we can today about this crazy rainfall we've been having since last week.
Oh, has it been raining?
Oh, didn't you not notice?
That's crazy.
No, actually, wow.
Nuts.
Oh, I've been so busy inside because we know one goes to work anymore. We all work from home. And I barely noticed. Except for my daughter's school was closed because there was water inundation and the school gets cut off in floodwaters, so all the parents were contacted and we had to pick up our kids about near midday. And there's only two roads of our whole housing estate that lead out of the housing estate to safety, and both of them get cut off by the same floodwater.
I had a rail bridge near my window.
Wow.
And I'm 30 kilometers from the sea.
And the window is on the second floor.
That's right, baby.
So there must have been just quite an amount of water.
Oh, it's true.
Fresh water, too, those whales.
Just water those.
The site of the new museum, the Powerhouse Museum in Parramatta, was totally underwater, which was great.
That's incredible. It's incredible. It's incredible.
That's perfectly cromulent.
Hey, that's a word that we use.
Yes. Incredulous that they should be moving a perfectly good site to a site that is occasionally underwater. Because, anything in a museum, clearly I think everything that gets entered into a museum says don't get wet, keep dry, fragile. And, having it just floating about in the basement, right, could be bad for it. Just imagine, you get no DNA off it. Right, because you know a lot of the stuff would get kept in. I know it's a technical museum, but having said that, you know there's artworks and things that I've seen at the current Powerhouse Museum, and that would be a tragedy if we were to lose some of those. So anyway, so the floods have been pretty bad here. I know up in Queensland now, they've got the same floods today in severity, probably worse though than was it back to 2012 or 2011 or something.
Yeah,
that was
pretty bad back then. Yeah,
because yeah, I put a data, I put a rack and new storage and, you know, paired storage, paired HA servers and everything. I put that into an office. And then the very next week, the floods happened and I had to drive back up there to Brisbane from my house, like 800 Ks, and put it into on top of a mountain. There is Interactive's data center, and I frantically found space up there and popped it in. So I had to relocate it, and I was wading through water to get to them. Right?
You're mentioning the weather, and with it, we can't help but talk about the climate. I want to share something.
I just have to tell you, it's pretty bad. The last point is there's dams that were on the brink of, you know, being declared empty, with water use in, you know, higher than the intake inflow, 40%, 50%, now whatever they were on Thursday afternoon, they're now all, they call them 110% full, which means all water coming.
It's overflowing.
Yeah, they're all overflowing.
I love it. It's 110% full.
That's because 100% is their control line, where they would normally open up the floodgates, but they've opened up the floodgates and there's still more water height than the floodgates are able to maintain. So they've got an overflow channel going around the side that's also completely full.
That's really interesting. I've never heard this term before. I'll tell you a story after, but I've never heard I was just watching the news earlier in the afternoon, and Queensland was going to hit by a rain bomb.
Yes.
And clearly what that means is like a massive amount of rain is going to fall. Not that it has to be
monsoon-like, Mickey, is really what they should be saying.
Yeah, like literally a wall of water. Now, I saw this once in my life. I was in Singapore at the time. We had Sentosa near the beach, and it was like luckily it was some kind of pagoda, like a beach house.
Yes.
So we ran to that. But as we stood there, it was literally a wall of water that came, like, I mean, it wasn't raindrops. It wasn't strings of rain.
It was being poured over the edge.
Yeah, completely. Mm-hmm. It was just a solid piece of water.
Yes.
was continuing to fall. Now, Singapore, as you might know if you've been there, has got massive storm drains. And if you've seen that kind of rain, you know why they have those storm drains.
I know, right? Like 5 foot deep channels on the side of the road.
Yeah. If you're drunk and you fall into it.
Good luck. Good luck. Never be seen again.
Never. But so I saw it. I can only imagine that is what Queensland is being hit by right now.
Yeah.
A rain, a bomb. But there's something funny, something ironic, I think. Are we all familiar with the Doomsday Vault up in Norway?
In Norway, yes.
In Spitsbergen. It's part of the Arctic Svalbard Archipelago. It is.
I know it is, and it's in permafrost. So yes. They don't need to refrigerate it.
Ah.
Until, of course, the permafrost melts, and good luck with that. So millions of mylar packets go flooding across the ocean.
Well, this is the funny thing, right? So the seas are, you're quite right, the seas are kept at about minus 18 degrees centigrade.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is about minus 0.4 Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very little oxygen necessary, you know, so, you know, obviously because you want to delay the aging process, and oxygen is a free radical, so you don't want any oxygen, right? So...
Mm-hmm.
One of the fail-safes in the event of electricity, failure, that is, was the surrounding permafrost, which is a frozen soil, as you know, and it's been there for thousands and thousands of years. However, a new report by the Norwegian government shows that the Svalbard, what a lovely name, Svalbard. I want to live in Svalbard, Dave. Svalbard. Where do you live? In Svalbard. Now, the Svalbard Islands are facing significant changes due to global warming.
Yes.
Which means the increase in heat will lead to a thawing of the permafrost.
That's true.
Will turn the solid ground around the facility into mush.
It's likely that none of those will be recovered. None of the seeds.
No. And more methane and carbon dioxide will be released.
Yeah.
Now, a few years ago, the falling permafrost put the world in jeopardy by flooding it, so that actually happened as well.
Yeah, but good luck.
It's not just the temperature changes, though. Rain will become more common and more intense as well. The snow
will
be shorter, so less freezing.
Yeah.
And avalanches and landslides, of which we've seen quite a lot recently.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this all over the world, right?
Across the planet.
Yeah, and they will be more common. Okay, now, that means our doomsday vault might be no good at all.
I mean, it'll be there.
Well,
it will just either be filled with mud. It'll be collapsing on itself, right?
Yeah.
All the mylar packets will be flooding across the ocean.
That's what'll happen.
You know, as a large island of mylar packets filled with seeds, right?
I think that's hilarious. Come on, tell me this is not hilarious.
All right, so just the scenario, right? We all emerge from our bunkers, having seen some tremendous catastrophe. You know, whether it's nuclear war or a meteor strike or whatever, I don't care what it is, right? And then someone happens across the Georgia Guidestones and it's like, okay, this way to the seed vault. Yeah, cool. And you eventually get to the big concrete door only to see that it's half submerged, right, in water. And it's taken you like 4 months to get there by foot and then swimming, a little bit of swimming and some boating, right?
Mm-hmm.
And only to discover that there's nothing there. And all of that energy was for the expectation that you'd be able to, you know, reboot society. It's gone.
It's gone.
So imagine the meeting in which the person said, are you mad? Put it in the... Why would you put it there? Right? Permafrost. Blah, blah, blah. Conversation goes on and gets voted down and everyone's very pleased with themselves. And they're at home going... I knew it. I knew it. I told you so. Gold. That happens, you see. That those conversations must happen. I really would have liked to have been there, Mickey, for the fly on the wall discussion to hear the proposal of why they needed to build it.
Yes. Yeah, I would have also liked to be part of the discussion when they introduced what to do when you find an... crashed alien spacecraft.
Chapter 13.
For the
Fire Brigade's handbook, yes.
Well, I mean, you don't put anything in there you don't think is going to happen. Full stop.
It doesn't have a description about what happens if you encounter the blob.
Nope.
That's not there.
Or Nosferatu. or a zombies. What?
That's the giant alien that floats in space and destroys it from space, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Sure.
Sure.
Why not?
What was the turtle with the fire that came out the holes?
Oh, yeah.
Godzilla.
I remember. No, I can't remember the name, but yeah. Oh, Godzilla had the best enemies.
I know, right? Mothra. I remember Mothra.
Oh, he was sweet, sweet Mothra.
I'll find the turtle. Hang on.
No. Nosferatu was the very first film made based on Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula. It was a black and white movie. And in fact, Nosferatu is a vampire. Nosferatu, creature of the night. That's funny. Oh man, I tell you, this world is going to hell in a handbasket. That's what's happening right now.
Yes, that's it. I found it. Godzilla fandom. Godzilla monster enemies ranked from best, like worst to best. Commobius.
Commobius. I love
Commobius. That's the one. The eagle. There was an eagle one as well, and a giant ant thing, and a spider, and a lobster.
Hey, those lobsters, you know, they're going to get their own back, don't you want?
Yeah. Well, one day.
One day. Now, it's interesting, though, not to detract from the fascinating
sure.
Godzilla conversation we're having right now, but so I do have to talk about it just a little bit because it's the obvious thing to talk about right now, the invasion of the Ukraine. Now, internet is divided, Facebook is divided, our friends are divided on how we should feel about this. As one of our friends believes, Ukraine brought it on themselves, you know, they shouldn't have thumbed their nose at Russia. And I say, no. at all, Lord. No, because, I mean, Ukraine is a sovereign nation. If they want to be part of NATO, knock yourself out. This is going to be a problem for Russia. Yeah, probably. But then they respond, okay, but you can't expect a free sovereign nation not to follow its own determination and make its own way in the world. You can't expect that, right? What happens then is, you know, it's on you. Yeah, sure enough. But, you know, Ukraine has as much right of self-determination as any other sovereign nation. So, now, having said all of that, things aren't going very well for the Russians right now. Why am I saying this? Because it's been almost 3 days now, and they haven't actually captured any cities yet, and they've attacked a few infrastructure depots. Now, I was very surprised because, I mean, the Russian military is quite powerful, we were told, right? And there's some 200,000 odd troops on the move. That's a lot of troops. Ukraine doesn't have a military that compares anywhere to Russia. But the Russians are not moving as swiftly, I'm sure, as they were hoping to move. Because the plan here is, everybody, in case you don't know, Russia intends to take Kiev and ideally capture the government, or most of the government, you know, either put them in jail or otherwise, and install their own Russia-friendly government. That's the game plan here, right? No one has any intentions of occupying Ukraine. It's too expensive. Russia can't afford to occupy the Ukraine. They just want to install their own little regime. And fair enough, too. But it's not going well. And the longer this goes, the worse it's going to go for Russia, because this costs a lot of money. And the Russian economy is actually not that strong. Okay?
I heard it was something equivalent to current Spain.
Yeah, we think it's a big country, you know, powerful, you know, militarily, la la la. It's not...
I know they've got some huge energy contracts with China.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's based on like a 10-year annual price,
so,
right?
So just to be clear, okay, Russia is ranked 43rd
in the world's economy.
No, among 45 countries in the European region.
Jeez.
Hey, yo, what? So the GDP per capita is $10,000 roughly US. That was back in 2020, right? And the gross domestic product is $1.483 trillion. Now, I'm going to give you the gross domestic product for U.S., which is significantly larger. Let's take Germany. That's right, there, Germany. Gross domestic product, because it's a powerful economy, but certainly not, you know, like a massive one. And that's $3.8 trillion. So it's double. It's 2.5 times. So Germany's economy is 2.5 times that of Russia, right? The gross domestic product. Okay, and the GDP per capita is $45,000 as opposed to the $10,000 I just mentioned for Russia. So it's not this strong economy. It doesn't have a lot of money. You think it's big, and it actually Russia is about 1/8 of the world's land mass. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, Russia owns 1/8 of the world's dry land.
And the sun, when they had all the way through to Warsaw, right? The sun never set on Russia.
No, correct. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Just like the British Empire. But
Germany's eastern border.
Correct. Now, the funny thing is this, right? Funny thing, I don't know. Russia can't afford to keep those troops in the field for too long. I mean, I reckon... 200,000 troops. Maybe if they step it up to 500,000 troops, which is what they really need to make a dent into Ukraine, in my opinion. Let's say 500,000 troops. I reckon they could keep them in the field for 2 months. But as soon as that stops, as soon as the 2 months are reached, I reckon we're going back to rationing. One potato per citizen. One potato, not two, not half, but one. And good luck with that. And it's going to be. It's funny. So he needs to do this quickly. He needs to do this very, very, very quickly. And I don't think the Ukrainians are going to play along. I think this is going to be very expensive. And then you got the sanctions as well. So they've just moved a few of the Russian banks, not all of them, it's important to understand, out of the SWIFT system.
That's right. That's right.
Money transfer global, et cetera, et cetera. But here's the one riddle, Dave, that I don't understand.
Go on.
Anybody in the chat room as well. I mean, I've spoken about this to Dave earlier. I don't understand... Chat room, I hope you're listening. Why did the Russians take Chernobyl? Why are they occupying Chernobyl?
No, I've got the story there. Yeah, I know. And there's no explanation in the story either. It just says Russian forces have seized at the control of the Chernobyl power plant in northern Ukraine. You know, actually, it was a surprise to some to hear where it actually was.
Yeah.
The site of the world's worst nuclear disaster and are holding staff hostage, according to Ukrainian officials. They just said this is a momentary view. You know, the troops overran it. Completely senseless Russian attack in this direction, as it is possible to say that Chernobyl is safe. This is one of the most serious threats to Europe today. Right? And it's right on the border near Belarus. It's probably the best way to put it. And I've got a picture up here, a little dotted lines area there, and that's the no-go zone because of the amount of radiation still existing in that area. All right. And even today, they've only opened it up for something like 5 minutes or 10 minutes exposure within a certain area only within the building. And that's it. But if you're driving around in tanks, have you seen how much dust gets kicked up by tanks?
A lot.
Yeah, and if you've seen that they've got, I think, I don't have a picture of it, but I saw it today. There was a picture of some tanks rolling through that I was, some vision, and there was a monstrous amount of radioactive dust getting blown up into the atmosphere. The good question that you've asked me, Mackie, and I didn't have an answer for it, and that is why. Why would you take it?
I don't know.
I know. I didn't have an answer. I searched for an answer for days trying to find something to no avail.
Makes no sense, right? I think.
Well, I heard they also took the airport in Kiev already, but you know it's all hearsay.
They didn't take it. They attacked it. So they blew up a refinement.
Oh, that'd be the fueling facility, yeah.
So they did blow that up. They did attack the airport. So they have not taken the airport per se, right? But certainly people have died on both sides, and soldiers as well as civilians. Not Russians.
And you saw that built the tower block.
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
it's hit by a rocket or a missile. I say missile. I saw the footage, the actual strike.
Now, having said all of that, I'm surprised that we're not seeing more
footage.
Of fighting. I mean, is this go softly? Is that what it is? I don't know.
Something interesting I saw was that the Russian troops are on Tinder and have marked their location as being in Ukraine and looking for hookups.
Really?
Yes. It's a story out there. I kid you not. It's real. It's real. And, well, I thought at least it's got to be consensual then, right? At least. That's pretty good.
I've got a big pot of borscht.
Is this the new world, right? So, hi, Valerie in the chat room. So, if you invade a country, you know, you're occupying it, right? It's okay. I can just say I'm here. And anyone want to hook up, you know, hey, it's all good. Right? Swipe right or whatever.
Swipe right. Maybe that's what this is. Maybe they've run out of... Because
I've seen the Ukrainian women, man. They're some gorgeous women there.
I know, but see all these mail-order brides from Russia, they've all gone, you know, all over the world. Off they go, all the women.
That's right.
So that means no eligible women left in Russia. So what does... I've got an idea. There's a whole bunch of Ukrainian women we can marry.
That's it.
You know, Falman needs a wife. Off he goes. That's what this is.
Putin needs a wife. Is that right? Yeah.
Putin needs nothing.
But Maggie, do you think that's crazy?
I do.
I know you do. Yeah, but I can escalate the crazy.
Escalate away.
All right. So I have some vision. I don't want to push play too much because I don't want any copyright strikes, right? So this is the Maidan Square footage here of a march of Indian troops and floats, and the floats themselves appear as though they could be military assets disguised as floats, and all the people doing the dancing and everything could simply just be military personnel. they go past a saluting base. It's a true military parade. And I'm kind of just a little astounded that you'd be doing it while your town was about to be, you know, consumed by Russian forces. So I asked this question. It's a silly question. But why is India and the Ukrainian military conducting a march with floats, music, dancing, and the best of the best Indian military marching by the saluting base?
Now, assuming that's actual real footage, and assuming Indian troops are actually there, let's
yes.
say, you know, special forces, let's say that all of that is true. Let's take
yes.
it as read.
Yep.
Don't know if it is, but let's say it is.
Why not?
And if it's not, then, you know, forget about it. But if it is, it makes perfect sense. Why? Well, the only way that America and Russia or the USSR could avoid a hot war back in the day, like, you know, in the 70s, 80s, etc., was by fighting proxy wars. So they would mm-hmm. fight the Vietnam War, the war in Afghanistan, certain engagements in the rest of Asia, in South America, in Africa, right? So all these countries were becoming the battleground between the USA and the USSR, right? And what the USA and the USSR would do, including the Allies, they would send observers and training specialists, advisors to these theaters of war that would advise whichever side they chose to support. Now, some of them, you know, we know now also fought. So the Chinese and the Russians and the Americans actually did fight. Certainly in Korea they did, Afghanistan they did. But it was never officially so. So these countries never declared war on each other, which is something nobody wanted. That's a good thing. Now, but by the same token, now it's hard to see a major power in action. Like, they don't often go out to invade and fight, you know, and to get real-life battle experience with a potential enemy like Russia and India, for example, right, is invaluable. The last time Russia really went to town was in Georgia, in 2014, I think. And you know, so you want to go and see what happens. Look at the battlefield tactics, look at the you know, procedures, look at the strategies, look at deployment options, et cetera, et cetera. You want to see how they perform on the battlefield. And you send your best soldiers to observe them. If you mm-hmm. happen to kill a few on the way, so good for you, right? And that's what the Americans did. That's what the Russians and the Chinese did in these proxy engagements during the Cold War. So I can see why India would be interested to send troops in to observe Russian ground forces fighting. Makes perfect sense. I mean, I would be surprised if the Americans didn't send some CIS. Oh, no, they're probably already there. Yes, that's right. So,
I would say in some way, shape, or form, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I thought some of the Ukraine military heads would have gone into Poland.
Yeah.
That's what I thought they might do to be safe. Yeah. Because, Warsaw.
Yeah, but you know what I admire? If it's true, again, if it's true, but this is a reporting that came out, the president, whose name escapes me, of the Ukraine.
Yes.
So the Americans apparently offered him, this is a CNN report, the Americans offered him a ticket out, like a ride out, you know, mm-hmm. a helicopter ride where you put you up in exile. Somewhere.
And he said no.
He said no. Not only didn't he say no, he said, I don't need a ride, I need more ammunition, thank you very much.
Yeah,
That's what he said. I think that's awesome. If it's true, I think that's really awesome of him to do.
Because we'll fight. And he did a live stream
just
a few hours ago, or thereabouts, right, his time, in the afternoon, in front of one of the buildings, not green screen. It was real.
Yeah.
And he said that we're not going anywhere. We're going to fight this because, you know, they're not rightfully taking what is theirs. We're an independent country. We have been. And, you know, this is an invasion. So,
now, everybody, compare this to your leadership. And I'm not just talking political
yes.
leadership, but your bosses in your work, right? But this is the kind of guy, if I was Ukraine, I could follow into battle. I could go, oh, yeah, hey,
uh-huh.
I get it. I dig it, right?
I do what I do, boss, yep.
Yeah, right. You're thinking, hey, this is actually impressive. If it's true, again, you know, always assuming it's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's someone you can stand behind, you know, and then go, yeah, look, hey. Because he was offered a ride out.
Yeah.
No crazy car, you know, queues, no crazy train. And there was some chaos on the train station and on the roads, of course, people trying to get out, right? No, you'll be flying out, your family, whatever, you know, off you go. Set you up in exile in Switzerland somewhere, whatever. I'm staying here, I'm fighting for my country, thank you very much.
But yeah, so.
Awesome.
That's right.
Anyway,
so there's a great gain to be had by Russia for this land grab. And we know that, you know, the borders around, or the buffer zone around Moscow, militarily speaking, and I'm speaking from Putin's behalf here, and marrying it to the messaging that came out of their closest ally to the south, which was there's historical reasons why we should allow this to happen, pretty much, right? Paraphrasing. And, you know, that falls into the same line from the perspective we should hear, I think, in not very many weeks from now. But having Ukraine will extend a buffer zone around Moscow, and also the river, which is their shipping lane of supplies in from the sea all the way into, pretty much goes past Moscow. So if in World War II it got close to being held, but it was unsuccessful, so that kept Russia in the game. If that wasn't under their control, and free movement of supplies through that channel wasn't allowed, it would be devastating to Russia, right?
Yep.
And to their you know, look, higher level military strategies. So going north to Poland and west into Warsaw, to me, seems like the logical push, but that's going to bring them up to German border, right? So I'm not sure when that would occur. Is this the first pawn in the move in a greater strategy, trying to keep the West at bay as long as possible? Sanctions, no one cares. Yes, they're large sanctions, but from what I hear, the yuan or the ruble will be used to trade between China and Russia, and from a strategic point of view, I'm not sure there is very much to lose. The only people surrounding Putin are, you know, bazillionaires, right?
Yeah.
And they're the ones who stand to lose more by these constraints that are being applied as a third tranche of constraints. However, do they do anything? Well, Putin issued a command, apparently. I haven't seen him with a direct translation, but haven't seen him say this, but the question was, well, you know, if you put this third lot on, where you delete our banking system from SWIFT and blah, 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 then it's game on against the West. He said, I'll consider that war. So will he? Will it actually do? Will any of this event eventuate into anything, or will the West sit back and just allow this to happen without there being any further engagement other than sanctions?
That's a good question.
Because if we do, then that would allow, to a different extent, the country to the south. I don't want to put too many words out there for the algorithms. But the country to the south to take what it believes is rightfully is theirs. And the West may also stand back and do nothing because of the greater threat of nuclear war or other types of tactical wars that would occur as a result.
Yep.
And if we stand by and let it happen, we are totally witnessing the transfer of power from the US.
Mm-hmm.
To the east. I mean, completely. Or to Russia and China. Honestly, this we're watching it in play right now. Fascism is it's hit its greatest level. Just like the doomsday clock is at 100 seconds to midnight. Our governments are totally in bed with, in control and being controlled by, holding the pocket of, big business, and only enacting their wishes, not ours. All right. Of our freedoms are getting deleted. I'm not making this a war cry, right? But what I'm saying is, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this in my whole life. I've never had. No one has. But to have our Facebook messaging and YouTube and Google and Twitter all being controlled by a power that is above our government, and therefore we're not allowed to say certain things, otherwise we get deplatformed or it's just deleted, or it's, you know, too sensitive to be put onto the media. When did that start? Oh, 2 years ago, pretty much, actually. A little bit before, when we started banning controversial people from entering Australia, for instance, like the David Icke's and Milo, for instance, even though you don't like him, free speech should be a thing. My big issue here is that we've seen this now turn also to Big Pharma. What's the next one? Big Coal? I have to answer questions. These are only questions. So I wonder what is next. But if we're seeing this transference of power to the east, for instance, in the next moves that will occur, because I believe they've joined their approaches together for a total outcome, and ultimately we'll see the next moves of this game being played out. And, I love the leader. Did I say that?
I love the leader more.
I loved the leader last night. And you say, I'm loving the leader right now.
He's under my desk.
And then I say, I love all the leaders.
And that's true.
We do. All of them. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. So this has been my dilemma watching all of this unfold. I've got my popcorn because I'm not emotionally connected to it. Yeah? I only sway my disappointment into my emotional jurisdiction, but otherwise I'm watching this. I know I laughed with my father today that I'm too old and decrepit to be called up for any military service.
That's true enough.
Right? Which is good. Woo-hoo! And my dad said that he's probably too old to even be in Dad's army. A homeland security, right? And I said, don't panic, Mr. Mandarin. And I'm practicing being that guy. Because I probably been given an outfit and have to, point the gun at the ocean and hope there's no one coming. It is honestly crazy. Mickey, I don't know. I don't know where we're going with this. I believe weather wars are a thing.
Yep.
Here's my shiny side out, tinfoil hat on. And I believe there are games being played right now with weather wars because they have the technology.
Oh, look, I think that's absolutely something. 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
But I don't think it's any one nation. I think everyone's doing it, just like everyone's listening to everyone else's comms.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Uh-huh. And I think, look, we are living in a world that is becoming less and less understandable to most of us. It's just a bit this way.
Who do you think, Mickey, would have a warehouse full of, well, you know, working from home equivalent, a warehouse full of hackers ready to deploy against your villain, whoever that happens to be?
Honestly, I think everybody.
Yes, everybody, that's right.
Every answer is everybody.
I'd be pulling people out of prison.
That's right.
To put into action. For sure. I don't think I would hold back on anything if that were the case. Yeah.
No.
Because you got to start somewhere. That's got to be one of the first steps of a conflict.
Yes. Well, I mean, see, I'm surprised because that's something that hasn't happened. Cyber attacks on the Ukraine, at least that I've seen.
Yeah, not that we've seen. The big attacks, Mickey, I've got a really cool website.
Okay.
It shows, yeah. I'm just putting it up now. I've got too many of these things. It's not that one. Oh, I forget where I put it. Oh, yeah, world's biggest data breaches. So the world's biggest data breaches are visualized in a tremendous website, which I'm just going to throw you, Mickey, so you can see it.
Beautiful. Thank you, sir.
They visualize data so beautifully. It's just incredible.
Yeah, got it.
And as you scroll down, you see these in comparison just dwindle away to nothing in 2004. But as you get up from say 2015 and above, that there is absolutely the most amount of data breaches that we've ever seen in the history of computing since, say, 1996.
You wait till quantum computing becomes a thing.
Oh, it'll be all the time, everywhere, immediately.
Wow, look at River City Media. Holy moly. Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
Spambot. Yes, yeah,
Spambot. Spambot.
Sorry, Spambot. Yeah, not Spambot. Yeah. What?
You get a Queen's English, Ricky. So Facebook is a multiple offender with a total of nearly a billion accounts being hacked there. Of course, we remember Yahoo, that's 1.5 billion accounts over time. And, you know, Twitter, Signverse. Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. So, yeah, they do a great job here, and there's so many different aspects of being able to look at the world with their data.
That's pretty neat. Sorry to sidestep, but something came through in the something came through in the chat room from Brent Howell. He's saying, shout us out, David Mackey, thanks for your loyal, dependable service to all the listeners over the past years. You're welcome. And as are all our other listeners that have been listening to us go on and on endlessly over the last 10 plus years.
There's a slight criticism there, but you know, I think it's more a warning, and that is please speak English and mind your pronunciation. And you're laughing, but still love it.
Yeah. Our pronunciation is the correct one. So if you speak English, then you, my friend, are in the wrong, but that's okay. It's okay. Look, we all love you. But the way we speak English, specifically me, that is the correct way. The correct way to speak the English is when the Germans win the war. Jawohl. And that's what happens.
You'll know, little bit killing KGB. You know, I've got Ukrainian background. I have, I don't know how many generations, probably 10 generations ago or something like that.
For me, it's 4.
Wow.
It's okay.
Well, you know, that's part of the Irish, Russian, and Dutch. So, The potatoes were big on the menu, I tell you.
I tell you what, we love the potatoes.
Peasant food, but I'm not allowed to eat it anymore, says my doctor.
Potatoes?
I'm doing a almost full keto. You know, that 6:18 thing.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm losing weight, which is great. I should. I think we all should be losing weight. But yeah, no, it's a really, really tough, really tough initially, but then you kind of just get used to it. This is what you do. You don't eat until after midday and you only eat protein and vegetables.
How about that? That's,
I miss potatoes.
So this is.
And bread. I miss bread too.
The condition that you have, is that where you can't have it?
No, it's just advice from my doctor.
Just general life advice.
I guess I don't want to see you in here as a diabetic person in a couple of years' time. So to avoid it, you know, lose your 30 kilos and get back to, you know, being a waif supermodel.
Right. Yeah, no.
Thanks. Can I have a second opinion? Yeah.
Indeed.
You need to be healthy.
Yeah.
I said, but probably not from you. They said, oh, they'll say the same thing.
That's just funny.
It's his professionalism that I respect. You know what that's from, right?
I do.
You don't?
I do.
You're good. Good. The crazy dentist.
That's funny.
So I've got another message from one of my peeps, Mackie. Russia took possession of that nuclear plant to keep it from being blown up.
I see. Yeah.
They planned ahead, making sure that it would not be used as a false flag. I think that's a good point.
Mm.
I've got to look into that more. But thank you. You know who you are. They're clearly listening, I think.
No, I appreciate that. Look, I'm just... Okay. Chernobyl. power plant. It's interesting. I was wondering if there was something there maybe that Putin wanted.
Yeah, an object or something they might have been able to utilize. Yes?
Yes, because it's not actually... I don't know. I didn't think it was active.
No, neither did I. I didn't think it was actively producing power because the whole place is a shutdown. It's lockdown.
Yes.
All the videos that I've ever seen of people arriving there's been no other cars in the car park. It's empty. And empty for miles. No one on the roads.
So I'm looking at an article here. While much attention has been paid to Chernobyl this week as Russia's invasion of Ukraine continues, there's growing concern about the four active nuclear power plants that supply half of the nation's power. Those four power plants, located near towns and cities in western and southern Ukraine, contain 15 operating nuclear reactors.
That's right. Not the Chernobyl plant, but the others have been shut.
So for me it would make sense if they're going to the other four nuclear power plants and make a beeline for that. The Chernobyl thing still mystifies me, I'll be honest with you, right? It's just odd. I still believe that there is something there that they haven't been able to get to for a long time. Maybe during the chaos years. I mean, initially they couldn't because it was just too radioactive, and then the chaos years after the fall of the Soviet Union, they couldn't. Now, though, he thinks, hey, I want whatever is there, and whatever that might be, it's now important enough to actually send a whole bunch of soldiers to
like Iraq and the important information left by the Sumerians.
What? That's...
Remember?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah. What was it that was there? I know.
Here we go. This is an update. The Chernobyl exclusion zone was the site of fighting between Russian and Ukrainian forces during the Battle of Chernobyl on February 24, 2022. As part of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Russian forces captured a plant the same day.
Wow.
Right?
I mean, why would you capture an inactive plant, mate? I know.
It's just weird, right? Anyway.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. So, with 5 minutes to go, I'd just like to remind everybody that this is David Mackey's Shiny Side Out, and this is episode 519.
Is it?
It is 519. That's right. 9, 10, and 500, which I totally forgot at the beginning of the show.
Yeah. Oh, so sorry. The three other reactors remained operational after the accident, but were eventually shut down by 2000.
Yeah, so there's no active reactors there, yeah.
Well, and they're looking to clean up. The waste cleanup is scheduled for completion in 2065. So the nuclear cleanup, the waste, the radiation, you've got another 25 years to go there, roughly, right?
Could you imagine if they just took the plutonium?
Oh, but the way it is, it's actually spent. But all it is, you can make dirty bombs with this stuff.
No. But if you shut down a reactor, you're just basically putting the rods in.
Yes.
And whether or not you remove the active radioactive materials from that, there's no fission reaction there, and therefore the water doesn't boil or overheat. It's contained.
Mm-hmm.
You can't expose it to air. It'll just catch fire. So if you were to extract that material from there, or maybe it was stored on site.
Maybe
they're all of the activities in 2000 meant that they just kind of left it there, and maybe it's been collected. Who knows? I'm not saying they've got spinning centrifuges, right?
Yeah.
But who knows?
It's just odd.
Dirty bombs are still bad.
Dirty bombs, they're better, right? You know, I mean, a blunt knife, if it's stabbed through your heart, will still kill you.
That's
it's a sharp knife. Look how sharp it is.
Ooh, nice voice. That sounded like someone I recognize. It's Wallace. It's Wallace. There's no.
You speak with dulcet tones.
I have to take my headphones off to listen to my own voice when I do that one.
Nice. I like it. Music should be coming any moment, but...
It's still 3 minutes, so...
Okay, that's all good. In the meantime, we can remind you again to please donate, and look, any form of currency is welcome, as Dave has pointed out earlier. And we are going to talk about alien astronauts, I guess, is really the topic that we're going to...
Mm-hmm.
talk about in a momento after the break. And a topic we haven't talked about for a long time. Right. But we'll talk about that when we come back, and we'll go through some old material, some interesting stuff, and then we're going to go to some new material over the next few weeks as well. It should be interesting also. Ancient aliens.
Well, I completely believe it's going to be interesting. Every time someone says nuclear plan, I can't help but think about Mr. Burns. I just can't. I can't help it. I'm so connected to that.
I'm with you.
It does my head in. But anyway.
No, it's a thing.
It is. And I've got to tell everybody about that astragalus root extract. That's available.
I ordered some.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah, it's on its way. It should be getting here by Tuesday, I think.
Yeah, good. Because it is one of the telomere activators.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. So you should be like, what, 25 next week? What are you laughing for?
Well, I did buy a whole pallet, and I mean consuming half a pallet a day. It does take you a while, but as your telomeres go back to what they were before your telomerase was shut down, then I can only hope that some of the negative impacts that life has had on me are reversed.
That'd be good, man.
Yeah, because I looked at the current photographs of the female medicine engineer, medical engineer, or chemical engineer, biochemist. That'll do. Yes, that'll do. and she doesn't look. She looks 30 years younger than her age. She's been taking that same thing. So look, it can't hurt you. It's just a plant root, and even if it does nothing, at least the other things in there will help me or benefit me.
That's the thing. Yeah, look,
it's part of ancient Eastern medicine, Mickey.
Completely. Completely. Yeah. So not overly surprised by any of that. I think it's awesome.
So. And there is the music.
Ooh, looky here now.
Someone's got a lazy 10 in the chat room. Look, this is David Mickey Shiny Sat Out. This is the end of the first hour. We'll be back after a short break to continue on a new live stream, as well as online and on air and on your smart device. Take care. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
What the heck is the Truth Jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Hey guys, Scorpio here. Join me every Saturday at 2 p.m. here on Studio A for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show, where we discuss the hidden agendas that impact our lives and uncover the secret societies and the shadowy elite who construct the reality that we are supposed to believe. So be there Saturdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, here on Studio A on Revolution Radio, and learn what's really going down.
Lost a little honey on the lone highway. Left it for another on the lone highway. They killed dirty Don McGee on the lone highway.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I wonder what happened to Mickey. Oh, look, I know what I can do. I can read it out. I just have to say, welcome back to Shiny Side Out with Dave and Mickey on the number one listener-supported talk radio on the net. So, push the donate button or subscribe to the archives for free. We also get yourself some merch from the station's website, maybe a T-shirt, a mug, or anything you like. You can make a donation in any form of payment is acceptable. Just go to the station's website for the details. We're halfway through show number 519. It is 519, and we're talking about ancient aliens. This is the second show in the arc, and I suggest we'd probably start when Mickey does return. But anyway, I think I can still hold the station. In the meantime, I'm trying to find the show notes from last week, and I'm struggling with that. I don't know if they don't turn up in downloads. Actually, they do.
I have got the show notes. I sent them.
I have got the show notes too.
Man, just a quick recap, everybody. So last week was really about understanding just how far-fetched or not the idea of ancient or even present-day visitations of this particular planet are by alien intelligences. Now, we're talking about true creatures from other planets. Now, Dave and I, through the vehicle of the hypothesis, believe that there have been many civilizations on this planet prior to this one. Some of them, we believe, were spacefaring as well, and quite possibly had contact with other spacefaring alien civilizations. I also believe that one day when we go back out into space officially, as it were, we will find that there are a lot of us out there. Like, I mean, you're like a human type. I mean, probably more ancient lineages of humans that we have lost on this planet, for example. And just to look at Bigfoot here for a second, who is to say that the Bigfoot phenomenon is not related to Stargate-type travel. It's mm-hmm. been, they appear, disappear, they're associated with UFO sightings, et cetera, right? So sort of, I think the reality of the world is a lot more complex than we were led to believe. But certainly, in the past, I believe that this particular solar system was connected without any, I guess, hidden secrecy to other interstellar organizations, trade routes, civilizations, et cetera, et cetera. And something happened 15,000 years ago, I think, that brought it to an end. Maybe longer ago, maybe the actual end came about maybe 50,000, maybe 100, maybe 150,000 years ago. 15,000 years ago was just the last straw that broke the camel's back, which really severed our active and acknowledged link with other civilizations. Right? It's really important to understand that the reality of the world is a lot more complex than we think it is. And we looked at the size of the universe. We looked at the size of galaxy that we inhabit, the Milky Way. We looked at the age of the universe. We also looked at planets that are Earth-like.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been bucket loads. I mean, we found quite a few. And they're like, we looked at the 10 most Earth-like as well. But this is what, in June 16, 2020, there was a University of British Columbia study that says there could be as many. And this is really the most important piece of information, right?
Are you ready? You're sitting down.
Yeah. There could be as many as 6 billion Earth-like planets in our galaxy. In
it's
our galaxy.
They're crazy numbers, Mickey, aren't they?
I did, completely. Now, if you put those numbers in context, right, and let's say you've developed a level of technology that allows you faster than light travel, which we know is possible, because something is traveling faster than light in quantum entanglement. So we know that speed is possible. Faster than light is possible.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's just information, but who knows? Again, we're talking about high dimensional space. That's another point. But 6 billion Earth-like planets. Now, another thing to be reminded of, is that life may not have taken the same route that we would recognize as life. Life might
that's,
not.
That's true.
Yeah, life might not depend on a Goldilocks zone on an Earth-like planet, on water, for argument's sake, or even oxygen. In fact, the very first life we had on this planet, was wiped out by oxygen.
Right? That's true.
The first great extinction event was when oxygen was released into the atmosphere, or was somehow.
Did you know, Mickey, that all of the coal that we have on Earth today was from trees that just got too tall and had fallen over before there was a bacteria that ate cellulose? And they just remained in place. And the other trees grew through the gaps and then pushed them out of the way until there was, 100 meters of thick, deep, tree growth. And remember, some of these trees would have been absolutely monstrous. It may be 100 meters to 200 meters tall.
Yeah, yeah.
I keep growing for at least a million years. Ironically, they all were consumed by the same fire where the lack of oxygen meant they smoldered, turning them into coal.
Right.
That was how all the coal was made, and all the coal was made at the same time on the Earth.
That's actually very interesting.
Yeah, so there was no life that could consume the trees.
Wow.
To break them down. I thought that information to me was truly amazing. Meaning,
it is.
Yeah. Meaning that life took place after the fire.
As we understand it, yes.
Yes. It rebooted again. That was another catastrophe.
It is. And look, I think we had five.
Yeah.
To be acknowledged. And I don't think it acknowledges, I don't think the five includes the oxygen, a kill of the life that existed prior to that. I think that's sort of six, really, I think we had. But in those extinction level events, only small percentages of the species survived, right? So what we have on the planet today is a very tiny representation of what was once possible or could have been possible. Mm-hmm. Right? And I do believe that once we go out there, again, officially again, right, then we will find potentially those life forms again, because I believe that we human beings have been around for a very long time indeed, millions of years, maybe tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of years. I know that sounds crazy, but is it? All right, is it? I watched this show recently on the coelacanth, and people, the debunkers, or people that don't like what I talk about, they say, oh, people talk about the coelacanth, that's completely wrong, you shouldn't do that.
Wow.
Without giving a reason, though.
That's right, of course.
There's no reason. Okay, so fine. Right. Now, let's be clear, though. So they focus in on the one thing. This was about dinosaurs as well. You know, do dinosaurs exist still, or did they all die out, or whatever? They focus on the one thing they can critique. I think the actual reality that we inhabit right now is a lot more complex than just, you know, trying to pinpoint very specific things. Do I think some dinosaurs have survived to this present day? So I know for a fact they have, in the form of birds, but that's not mm-hmm. what I'm talking about. In Africa, especially in central Congo, they talk about this creature called the Mokele Mbembe, which is, for all intents and purposes, looks like a small, brachiosaurus.
Right.
And that's what yes. it looks like. And then you've got, you know, there's stories of the sea snakes and the loch or the lake monsters, etc., etc. It's a whole bunch of stuff that is quite interesting. And again, nothing has been verified. Nothing has been, scientifically proven. And that's true. It hasn't, right? But we have these stories. I mean, the coelacanth was a story as well until they caught one in a net. And they only did that really recently.
Yeah.
But ultimately, though, I think human beings have been around for a long time. And we have all this evidence as well, Dave, of these tools, even human remains that are in strata that are tens, if not hundreds of millions of years old.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These spheres from South Africa, I think they're called, I can't remember what they're called. You know the metal spheres that have like a ridge around them, look like a cricket ball?
Yes, that's right.
And they're apparently billions of years old.
Or they're
found in strata. You know, and now some scientists say, oh, they're just naturally occurring phenomena. Okay, well, what naturally occurring phenomena has produced those?
Mm-hmm.
Please tell me. Please, I'd like to know. But, you know, again, we're falling short on explanations. So same with this ancient alien thing, if you will. I think this planet, specifically, and I don't think necessarily Earth is unique. In some ways it might be. But I think it was just part of a vast network of worlds. And maybe at some point it held a special place. You know, maybe that's why we're in the trouble that we're in today. I don't know. I do believe, though, that there was visitation on this planet. There was a visitation that altered us, the surface humans, talking about the surface
yes.
humans, right? We were tampered with. The internal humans or the underground humans or, you know, the intraterrestrials or the inner terrestrials,
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, they're probably pretty much the same as they always were. But we have been tampered with on the surface. And we know this because there have been many, many stories.
Well, the Sumerian texts describe it quite clearly.
100%. Right? And we look at ancient texts, right? And then we're now sort of going more into the ancient alien kind of thing. But we look at ancient texts and we see indications, we see snippets, we saw even in some cases almost irrefutable evidence of massively advanced technology. Like mm-hmm. technology at the time that common sense, as we know, understand, or uh-huh. our best scientific understanding, wouldn't allow the inhabitants of the planet at the time. We just couldn't allow it. I mean, I'll give you a simple example, very simple example, and because a physical artifact is irrefutable. The physical artifact is there. How it got there, we don't know, but there it is. There's a sarcophagus inside the Great Pyramid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the pyramid had to be built with the sarcophagus already inside it because there's no way to get it in. Once
there's no openings large enough to get it
correct.
In, yeah.
Now, the outside of that particular sarcophagus is very rough hewn granite. I mean, it's really like this. It looks rough. However, the inside of the sarcophagus is perfectly machined. Perfect straight lines and perfect right angles and polished to a high sheen. Now, we would have trouble to do that today on a lathe. But a lathe, you would need to do it.
With milling machines.
Yeah. It didn't exist at the time, they say.
That's right.
Nonetheless, there it is. They used sand, you see. Sand.
And copper tools.
And copper tools. Now, you try to work granite with a copper tool, see how far you get. But there are these artifacts. And this is just one. This is just one. There's so many others. You look at Puma Puma, mm-hmm. the perfect machining that was there. You look at the Inca walls, right? You look at any of the ancient sites that you look at them in awe because you look at them, oh, wow. Today, you would do that. You'd go, oh, wow. And that reaction is a natural reaction to see something that is so out of the ordinary that you feel, innately, you feel this sense of awe. You're standing mm-hmm. in front of something great, right? I'm not even talking about the pyramids now, right? The stones at Baalbek, you know, the 1,000-ton stones. You know how hard it is to work a 1,000-ton stone? Let me tell you, it's very hard.
Tell me.
I spoke to some masons, right? And they said, look, the problem is, if you do work a stone that big, right, and what you're doing is you're quarrying it out. That's what you're doing, right? But you don't know the structure of the stone. So the thing is, it could be internally fractured. You don't know that. You don't know, you know, until you actually get it all out, but that could fall apart. Because and the thing is this, now this is the question I always ask, why? Why? Why would you do it when there's so many other ways you can build something? You don't have to do it this way, but someone thought, oh, this is just the way we do it. Thank you very much. And off they go. Right? This is really, really important to understand that these things were done when other things could have been done in a much easier way. Use smaller stones, use concrete. The Romans used concrete for everything. They didn't build the big stones. It wasn't their thing. Yet we find these amazing stones in Baalbek. And in fact, we don't even know which civilization acquired them. We don't know because the Baalbek temple itself, the Jupiter temple, shows three distinct periods of construction. Mm-hmm. Very distinct. Very, very distinct. And if you go there and see the pictures, you know what I'm talking about.
I'm throwing them up on the screen.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
All right. So it's a large stone that everyone sits on. Yeah. It's on an angle in the quarry. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And then I've got a shot here of those massive stones used in the true foundation of the Jupiter
yes.
temple.
Yes.
Which is the most ancient version. And then on top of that, you can see a row, three rows of stones that are less large than the base stones, but again, larger than the set of one, two, three, four stones above that, which look like they're small, manageable stones that you'd have quarried somewhere and delivered on site, roughly the same size as we would do today,
yeah.
as like brickwork,
yeah.
right? We would use concrete today, but anyway. We wouldn't do anything as ridiculous as this. We can't move these stones with machinery. We'd have to build a machine to move them intentionally.
Yeah. A friend of mine is an engineer. I mean, he was a friend of mine. I haven't seen him in 20 years, but we used to go to the gym together. He was an engineer.
Yeah.
And he configured cranes. And he had to configure, I think it was up in Newcastle. He had to lift this massive mm-hmm. load, right? And this was like, I don't know, several hundred tons or whatever it was. And he configured it wrong, so they had to take down the crane again, right?
Yeah.
But my point is, so can we do it? Yes, but it's a huge effort. It's a massive effort, and people don't understand that, I think.
Yeah, I know. So 5 meters as a cube, but 21 meters long is such an immense stone. Now, when the Romans built on top of the Jupiter temple base, no one questioned them at the time going, hey, those rocks, how did you move those? We built the whole thing, clearly, right? Because we're awesome. And then where'd you get them from? Don't know. And then they found where the origin, but the Romans had been dragging around some monoliths, right? And ended up having to break it in half because it was just not movable.
It was one of the Egyptian obelisks.
Obelisk, that's what I meant, yes.
He was. I think it was from Alexandria, I could be wrong. But what happened is they tried to move it, but Dave is right, they had to section it into three and then move the three different sections.
And then rejoin it in place because it was just unmanageable. Yeah, and now, to be honest, when you mentioned the South American stonework, well, there's stonework that exists all around the world in that same monolithic period.
Correct.
Where the arc, the stone masonry is identical, where there's, you know, 5 20-sided pieces. They go around a bend, like 90 degrees. Each piece is custom just for that location in the wall, yep. which makes no lick of sense, right?
No, not zero.
That you wouldn't do it. It's too much engineering, too much effort. Because I would ring down, like if it was a mobile phone, right? I'd call the quarry and say, I need, you know, 100,000 stones and give them the dimensions. And they just get to it. And they deliver me the stones and I use them. Rather than saying, okay, now I've got this one. Okay, we just put this one in. Now we've got this really unusual shape. It's got 9 sides. Some are right angles, some aren't. And I don't want to get a, you know, cigarette paper between them. When you deliver it, it's got to fit perfectly. How are they going to do that?
Indeed.
For every stone. What a delay on the... I can't imagine how ridiculous that effort would be to make over-efforted.
Yeah. And it makes... I mean, because there's so many other easier ways to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, it's not like, oh, let's find the most complicated way to do it and then do it. That's just silly. And human beings don't really work like that anyway, right? But having said all of that, right, it is really, really important to understand that these artifacts exist. They're there. Like I said, we believe that many other civilizations have been here before this one on this planet, and a lot of them were, you know, human in nature. But I do believe very strongly, because we've seen the pictures. The pictures have survived. The pictures are there. And some of them look human. Others don't. I mean, some look humanoid, I should say. Others don't look humanoid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe because we've been around for such a long time, humans that is, or, you know, like human-like creatures, we've just spread so far in the galaxy, right, that we inhabit many planets. Many other planets are probably held by other creatures. And look, I don't want to stress the point here, but if you look at the octopus, for example, right, is it possible that they are remnants of a colony, an outpost of other aliens that came here, right? Slightly different biology to ours, right?
Proper blood.
Yeah, exactly. Slightly different brain configuration. They've got 9 brains instead of just the one, and mm-hmm. distributed. It's like a distributed brain system, neural system.
That's right.
Which is interesting. We have a distributed Quantum. Nervous system, right? But we don't have a distributed brain system, right? We don't. We have a singular processing unit. They've got 9 processing units.
Mm-hmm.
And very clever creatures, too. Very, very clever creatures. Okay, and others, maybe dolphins, whales for that matter, maybe they represent a species that, you know, maybe developed or evolved elsewhere or whatever and came here and then just, you know, got stuck when something went wrong. I don't know. The point is, there's a lot going on that we don't understand. We have these sightings today of all these things we don't understand. So there must be something actively going on beyond our understanding, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought all this up because we wanted to start off saying, look, it is not that far-fetched to say that there could have been extraterrestrials or creatures that didn't evolve on this planet that could have visited the Earth in the past. The sheer number of potential life-bearing planets, Earth-like life, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The relative proximity of some of them, Proxima Centauri B, 4 light years, right? TRAPPIST-1e, the best so far that was found, or the most likely to support life as we know it, only 40 light years away. In the scheme of things, not that far, really, if you think about it, right? In the neighborhood, really. Others, you know, 2-3 light years as well. I mean, some are much further away, of course. But there might be some near us that we haven't discovered yet. Okay, now, but they're saying, and I want to say this number again because I find it so astounding, 6 billion Earth-like planets, potential. The potential for 6 billion.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one for every citizen on, well, not quite anymore, but one for every citizen on the planet, right? Oh, I want this planet. I'll take that one. So that's where we are from trying to establish some sense of credibility. Or just, because everybody can be a naysayer. Oh, yeah, that's not right. And you know, you can make a career out of it. As a scientist, artist, or nonsense, just believe it, and you just stick with the hard facts. You'll never be wrong. You will never be wrong if you just stick with the hard proven facts. But you will also get nowhere. You will not ever discover anything new if you just stick with what you know. Right?
Well, that's a really good segue into the show notes.
I know, right? Now, Dave?
Thanks. So, ancient aliens is a favorite topic of mine. The theory of ancient alien visitation, though, to the Earth is both controversial and deeply polarizing, as Mekki's, my esteemed co-host, has pointed out. Even with the field of conspiracy. While there is evidence for high technological achievements in the past, the source of that high tech is disputed. Now, you know, like the Baghdad battery. There's no soot inside the Great Pyramids, for instance. And there's pictures of what looks like large illumination devices, those long tubes with a snake in it. But then a very large piece of what we can identify today is, like, as we see it on power poles, insulation material. So isolating the glass tube and its filament from the ground. And that makes total sense. You can even see cables powering it. So the observer, whoever it was that was looking at this and having to note it all down, took the simple things that they could comprehend away and then noted it. Okay. Some say aliens visited the Earth in ancient times and imparted the knowledge. Others say that we ourselves reached high-tech civilizations before this one. There's a few examples. The human race as a phoenix.
Yeah, so,
comes and goes.
Yeah, so let's look at these
one by one.
In some detail. So what does it mean, human race as phoenix? So the legend of the phoenix is essentially, everybody probably knows.
Rising from the ashes.
Yeah, so yeah, essentially that it's if the phoenix itself is immortal, right? But it burns itself down and then it rises again from the ashes anew, right? And now we like to think of us as a phoenix with amnesia. Because we don't remember the rise and fall of civilizations that went before us. I mean, tens of thousands of years ago, not the Roman Empire, but, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 years ago, 40, 100,000 years ago. According to current estimates, the humans, we've been in this present form for 300,000 years.
And that's the current scientifically agreed.
But since we started the show, this date has moved further and further into the
past. That's right.
Okay, including the understanding that Neanderthals aren't our ancestors, but rather our cousins, if anything.
And remember, Lucy was only 120,000 or something, right?
Yeah, exactly right. So let's be clear. We don't really know. So I think the human race has gone through these cycles of civilizational extinction many times. And we rise again from the ashes only to discover that, you know, many things have happened in the past. We've got these legends, these myths. Not really understanding what they really mean, right, Dave? And yet these artifacts, these structures, these mechanisms in some cases
exist. Have withstood the test of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're here and you can't argue it.
100%. Now,
and look, to be honest, we don't use those building styles. It all makes complete, it's complete nonsense to do it. You couldn't do it with anything we currently are able to use.
Correct. But what about the next point, though?
Yeah, ancient human interaction with alien races due to high-tech advancement. Absolutely, I support this too, as well as the first point.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe we have already been out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
The inner Earth was, I mean, I really believe the surface dwellers, us, we are the stepchildren here, right? We are the ones that really
that's a good way of putting it.
Get much for saying anything, or we're really not included in much. But the point is, we really I think it's the inner earthers that still have a pulse on the finger of things.
So if I relate it to the current media, in probably the best way I can, if the Tic Tac itself was just technology that we humans had made in a prior elevation of our technical advancement, and then, but because of, you know, galactic rules, unless the people had warp drive, you don't talk to them, and so they live quietly in the oceans, undisturbed, only seen from time to time. Just for example, I know it sounds a bit left field, but there you have it. If that was us or another race that just happened to find solace here on Earth, it's a safe haven from them. Maybe the instruments can't find them beneath the water, and the alien race is looking for them. For instance, in a science fiction style, can't see them, and so they live here safely and out of our jurisdiction. We don't even know what's on the bottom of the ocean. We know more about the moon.
That's also true.
So, I could postulate that there is evidence that there was a technology on the moon's surface, certainly on the rear side of the moon, and Mars was devastated by something enormous, taking one whole hemisphere with impacts. I think that if there was a high technology here and we'd gotten as far as Mars and the moon or something similar, or the moon was just where the watchers lived and maybe they're all gone now. I don't know. Yeah. For whatever purpose, if I was desperate and I needed to find a new home for my people and there was something compatible, but an ancient race, you know, of low-tech people lived on the surface, I could live in the water.
And you know what, though? See, with the moon, let's just stay there for 1 second. What? This is a big...
What is the moon?
Well, what if we found something there?
I know.
Like, you know, and it goes, well, you better not see this, right? And mm-hmm. an operation underway. I mean, who knows? I don't know, right? It's not a point. But something could have been there. And because we didn't go back for 50 years, and only now are we making overtures to returning yet again mm-hmm. to the moon. Letting literally 50 years pass. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't at all. And then you've got these moments of truth that seem to trickle out.
Apollo 20's unusual EVA silence.
Yeah. Yep.
I know, right?
There's all this stuff that you know, and is this something? Is this something? And the answer is, you know what? Maybe it is something. Maybe there's a lot more here than what we suspected, right?
And you scratch the surface only to find there's more questions to ask.
Yeah.
Because you get a little bit more detail, and you end up going to so far down that rabbit hole of data that it becomes unmanageable, the amount of data.
And you're definitely then talking about ancient aliens, because
yes,
the moon was not reached by us for thousands and thousands of years. So somebody,
and there was time before the moon.
Ah, that's what they say as well, right?
I know, we covered that off. So, look, if the moon is just an ancient, you know, spacecraft, for instance, or something similar, artificial, where the people, maybe it was the Sumerian, the Anunnaki, right? Maybe the Anunnaki did inhabit the moon. Maybe they brought the moon with them. Maybe that was their ship. And in the battle against, you know, the people saving the humans and wiping them out, and it was a conflict, and that's what remains in the sky. Mm-hmm. It's a remnant. And I can imagine the great story of us, if it ever came out, that we actually found out that, yes, it was hollow. Yes, it you know, the surface is dusty, sure, from all the meteor impacts and all the debris, but that there's an ancient, maybe it's an ancient structure, right?
Yep.
That is something. And because, you know, We get to this point a bit later, but I'm going to say, are we already out there is a great question.
Yeah, absolutely. And the answer is probably, right? Now, mm-hmm. the other one we sort of breached already, and it's the truth terrestrial civilization underground or under the oceans, right?
Yes.
And again, Dave can speak for himself, but I very strongly believe that we are cohabiting this planet with one or many other mm-hmm. civilizations, which keep themselves completely from us. And given clearly their technological advancement, I don't think it's hard for them to stay away from us. It also would make sense in light of cattle mutilations and other things. I mean,
Did you know that they've been going on for a much longer time than we were led to believe?
Oh, completely.
I saw a cattle mutilation documentary just the other day, and experts themselves who performed the tests and took all the anecdotal evidence, and that more than 200 years, Becky, of exactly the same encounters.
I'd be going as far as saying it probably goes back a lot further than that.
Completely, yeah.
Because nobody kept records of it. I mean, who cares anyway? And maybe animal sacrifice started like that, because clearly it's not the gods come from the sky, for example, and mutilate the cattle. So clearly that's something the gods like. So like, hey, let's do that. Let's kill the cattle or whatever, mm-hmm. or gods. And I'm not saying that's what happened, but I'm just saying it wouldn't surprise me if that was.
You know, the one eye, the one lip, the tongue, the cheek.
Yeah.
You know, no blood. All of that description is identical.
Yeah.
Going back in time at least 200 years, said the people doing that research.
let's say you're a true alien from another planet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I would understand why you would do it a number of times. Come here, you look at some, especially domesticated animals, maybe you don't know, mm-hmm. and you do what you do, right? But you wouldn't keep doing it over hundreds of years. Whereas if you were an earthbound civilization, so people that are here, then it would make perfect sense to check up on livestock potentially.
Yeah.
It would even make perfect sense to abduct us once in a while.
Do you remember the Queensland couple, Mickey, on their farm where the cattle mutilation had occurred,
yeah.
something like 20 Ks from their house through bushland, and the only road there is their road. So to get there, you've got to go past their house, and there is no other houses for miles.
Yeah.
There's no one can get to this. And I think that story alone is truly evidence, because they didn't know of this stuff. They tried to keep it quiet. They told some people. It ended up getting out. And it wasn't them, dancing up and down and having A-frames with trumpets saying, honk if you believe in cattle mutilation. Right? They didn't want the story out. And reluctantly, you can see it. They're not all proud of what's happening.
But see, a lot of people, and this is, again, my favorite topic, is people that actually
yes, I know.
Owned that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They sold it. I don't have anything to do with it.
That's crazy.
It is, right? It is.
Yeah, yeah.
But places like the Skinwalker Ranch and other places of mystery, they exist. And stuff happens there that we cannot explain.
What
happened? Oh, how did it happen? What's going on? We don't know. What do you mean you don't know? We don't know. This is exactly what I'm saying to you. We don't know. We have no idea. And you think, okay.
Yeah. So life being already here, sharing the planet with us, maybe it's been here for a while. Maybe they are the Watchers. The Watchers have been described in stories all around the world.
Yeah.
And things have been found, even a crashed UFO before human flight in America, and the occupants were buried in it, and they even had a service for them, in a metal ship, short, big eyes, spindly bodies, the whole thing described perfectly as today's law, but back then, crazy. It's almost, it beggars belief, right? However,
It does,
right? But there it is. It happened. The other one, the question that I've already kind of raised this, and that's the solar system war, a galactic war, what have you. There are stories that, and this is from India, Mickey, from Sumer.
Yeah, yeah.
There are stories that there were conflicting races that have visited here. And races, I should say, types of beings with differing opinions who had had it. And in the 17th century or 14th century, there's one above Europe. And
yes.
Clearly in the air they could see, right? And they could tell who was winning. That is something else. When you can tell who's winning by foreign objects in the sky shooting at each other in a way that, was lights and cones and circles and cylinders, right?
Isn't that nuts? I mean, really, if you think about it for a second.
Yeah.
And they captured it in paintings, they captured
that's
it
right.
in art, and it's there. I mean, these artifacts exist.
That was the way of recording the information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and not only that, but you go further back in time, you look at Ezekiel, his account of how
that's
he
right.
up in a spaceship, he describes mm-hmm. the Earth as to what it looked like from a really high height. Now, there was no flight, there was no atmospheric flight.
There was no way of doing that. That was our flat land right there.
And mm-hmm. yet he describes it to a T. That's what it looks like. This is
that's right.
Right there, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How do you know? And he's not alone either. I mean, the Bible is full of this kind of stuff, right? And not just the Bible. I mean, Muhammad himself was taken up,
mm-hmm.
or not, right? From that's why Jerusalem is the third holiest site for Muslims, because at the rock there, the temple of the rock where it's now the mosque is.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Muhammad was taken up into the sky by God,
that's right.
as he says.
That's right.
To dispute that. What
about Hercules? Was it Hercules that was made one of them? Yes,
so,
that's
so,
right.
So his father was one of them anyway, right?
That's right.
His Zeus. And then he was granted, membership, whereas Gilgamesh was not, right? Which is interesting. But his ancestry included, his mother, I think, was one of the gods, right? So it's interesting how they're quite selective as to who they're in. and who they don't let in, right? And he wanted to get the, I guess, some medicine for his buddy.
Yeah.
But he was denied. He was denied. Nope, can't have it. Sorry.
Nope.
Okay, guys.
So the last point, Mickey, you read, what's that one?
Oh, yeah. The panspermia. You mean that or the solar system war?
No, I think we covered solar system.
Yes, okay. So panspermia is really interesting. It's a concept, obviously, right? And it sort of ties in with the idea of how similar creatures could inhabit potentially the entire galaxy. So the first known mention of the term was in the writings of the 5th century BC, so 2,500 years ago. Yeah, I know, right? Greek philosopher Anaxagoras.
I wish we were like Bill and Ted, Mickey. We could just go back and talk to them, yeah?
That'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go talk to Beethoven and
Beethoven.
Socrates. Now, in the 19th century, it was again revived some 2,000 years later, or almost 2,500 years later, in modern form by several scientists, including Jöns Jakob Berzelius, 1843, Kelvin, 1871, Hermann von Helmholtz, and somewhat later by Svante Arrhenius in 1903. There is as yet no evidence to support or contradict panspermia, although majority view holds that panspermia, especially in its interstellar form, is unlikely given the challenges of survival and transport in space. So we're going to talk about that in a second. Sir Fred Hoyle, 1915 to 2001, and Chandra Vikram Singh, born 1939, is still with us, were important proponents of this hypothesis, who further contended that life forms continue to enter Earth's atmosphere and may be responsible for epidemic outbreaks, new diseases, and the novelty necessary for macroevolution. Panspermia does not necessarily suggest that life originated only once and subsequently spread through the entire universe, but instead that once started, it may be able to spread to other environments suitable for replication. So we already know that an organism as complex as tardigrades survives space just fine. And that's a multicellular, like, complex organism that looks like a little animal.
It looks like a little puffy, like eight-legged creature with a mouth on the front.
Mm-hmm. And the thing, so the argument saying that space is too averse, or adverse rather, to life.
We've put the tardigrades through hell.
Yeah.
Freezing them and trying to burn them, and
there they are.
They just keep going.
What
have we done? We've quantum entangled one.
We've quantum entangled. That's just insane. But the point is that, no, it is absolutely not a showstopper.
Mm-hmm.
Space travel for these creatures. So even protein chains for crying out loud, right?
Yeah. So, but a human floating through space is not viable, but certainly tardigrades make it.
Yeah. So for us, we really need a lot of tech help to survive.
But also knowing that we could populate the entire, I think it's like 90% of the Milky Way galaxy within a million years, even with our current tech. Isn't that nuts?
It is.
It just sounds so implausible. But no, the math is there.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, we would just set generational ships, you know, and the chances are, though, that, you know, these generational ships would be overtaken, like Dave pointed out last time, by ships that are more advanced, and on it goes. So we might be having colonies. So the first generational ship is, let's say, launched in 20 years' time, right? And it's like 10,000 people on it, and it's a really big thing, and off it goes. In the intervening 100 years or 500 years or whatever it is, we might have sent 4 or 5 different waves of immigration, and by the time those generational ships get there, they find a flourishing interstellar civilization.
Right? Which is us anyway, yes, right.
Yeah, it would be, how cool would that be, though? That would be awesome.
That would be great.
But so panspermia is just not necessarily intelligent life, you know, but this is just
microbial snippets. Life, right?
Yeah.
Or tardigrades.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's say a meteorite impacts the Earth. A whole bunch of biological material is thrown up, in fact, is launched outside of Earth's gravity well.
Yeah.
It now becomes space-bound, and some of it might survive, which is great. And then it could potentially then go on a bit of a trip.
Yeah, that's right. So it pushed in the right direction, and since the solar system is already moving, it could stay in place, and the solar system moves away from it, only to encounter something else in 10,000 years, right?
Yeah.
The other is that we know there's some extreme temperatures at the end of our outside of our heliopause, and you know, some 1500 degrees or what have you, right on the pores where the plasma is. We didn't know that existed, but even given that, it's still completely possible. Yeah. Where we have a third generation star, it's estimated. And that means there's been two other opportunities for life bearing, planets to have existed in this region where we are, where our solar system inhabits, out to, the nearest one, maybe.
The nearest one. Do you want to call us now?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I can tell you exactly. It was Tau. Sorry, TRAPPIST-1e.
No. Even just, you know, where.
Proxima Centauri. It's Centauri.
Centauri, that's right, Centauri. Yeah. So, as Lost in Space had a mission to go to Alpha Centauri, we know now Proxima Centauri is probably the most likely of life anyway. And there's a trick. There's a third star as well. And it's an awkward one, and that's the furthest away from the pair of A and B in Centauri. So anyway, having said that, all of these stars are from a prior group of stars, a prior star and one before that as well. It's quite possible that life started somewhere. Panspermia could be completely a thing, or it was transmitted around. Like a beautiful old cartoon, Mickey, of evolution, where a Coke bottle is left on a planet discarded by one of the astronauts, and life evolves from the Coca-Cola.
Yeah, from the bacteria on the rim, etc.
No, from the actual liquid still inside.
Oh, really?
It's a cartoon, but it's a beautiful cartoon. If I find it, I'll think it to you.
Well, it's very similar. Panspermia, actually. So Star Trek did something that is actually took several steps in the. Away from panspermia, but with the same kind of principle, where they had this ancient, spacefaring race of cedars. And it's similar to the mythology, of course, that is proposed by an alien,
Well, Prometheus.
The movie Prometheus.
The story Prometheus talks about the same thing.
Yeah. So Star Trek said, Jean-Luc Picard is actually, his hobby is archaeology. So he gets involved in this archaeological find, and, the DNA, it's actually the DNA of several species. Once you combine it, you get a video message. And this is from the original cedars of our galaxy, as it were. Which was, it was a two-part or a three-part. I really enjoyed that particular episode. Is it possible? Well, look, again, if we go to Kepler, 452b, or we go to, Proxima Centauri b, or TRAPPIST-1e, or any of those planets that we've identified, right? And we find us there, then the theory of seeding becomes highly likely, simply because, and we've discussed this at length at some other point in other short cycles, it is highly, highly, highly unlikely that life would evolve along the same lines as it did here. Now remember, we went through five, maybe potentially six extinction level events, which destroyed most of the species that were here at the time. We just happened to be the end product of those five extinction level events. Other planets would have gone through other events and other biological configurations, etc., etc. I mean, even on this planet, the crabs or lobsters as well as the octopus using copper instead of iron to transport oxygen through their body.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, it's the configurations are highly unlikely to be us out there. So if we were to find ourselves, again, I think it stands to reason that either there was a seeding event or, more likely in my opinion, that we are already out there and we were part of at least an intergalactic civilization. Or intragalactic, I should say. Oh, no, actually intergalactic. Because, no, intragalactic. Intra, not inter. Because intergalactic would mean we have gone to other galaxies as well. Maybe we have. I don't know, right? Maybe we have. And then maybe the thing is this. Once we move into high dimensional spaces, Dave, and I saw this really awesome drawing.
And I've got something to add. Keep going.
Yeah, then distance becomes irrelevant. Distance becomes irrelevant. In fact, we don't even have to live very long to traverse galactic distances if we can move in high-dimensional spaces. Right? Like, look at the quantum entanglement. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, so our galaxy itself has exposed, through evidence of the arms and the age of the stars as groups, we've determined, as a human species, we've determined that there are at least three or more galaxies that make up this galaxy, as they have been consumed by this galaxy, collided and consumed by, and then formed what we currently see. So even if it was intergalactic by means that our galaxy joined with another, that is still considered, or would be considered as, intergalactic panspermia.
Actually, that's a fair point, yeah. I like that.
I put that question about the cartoon movie where life evolved from the Coke bottle off to my partner, who is a genius with film.
Nice.
I hope she makes it back in 10 minutes.
That's all good.
7 minutes left.
7 minutes, I know, right? Okay, so just to recap very, very quickly, 7 minutes is, an eternity sometimes.
We got a whole page.
We got a whole page today. How about that? No, but to be fair, it was a page that had a lot of bullet points, which in themselves were quite packed full of information, right? So, yeah, so just for our listenership out there, we went through one page of show notes today for you. And we got another 10, 15 to go, but there will be more once we update. Oh, there will be more
updates
happening, which is goodness. And including our own experiences that we've had over the years since we first did this. Because we actually did go to Mount Diego National Park, and we saw a few things that were very, very interesting.
And the tales that adjoin those are of great importance to this topic.
Completely. Again, sort of kind of creation myths, sort of, but certainly something we need to discuss with you.
A story that's at least 80,000 years old.
Yeah, so pretty old. and also, it is just a topic that meets with a lot of opposition. And the key reason for that, or used to be at least, but the key reason now is because we're scientists, we know it all, if we should have found something by now, et cetera. Of course, not nonsense, complete nonsense arguments, because a civilization that is, let's say, type 1 or even a type 2, forget about type 2, but let's say type 1, is so far ahead of us, we wouldn't even begin to understand their technology. It would be like complete magic to us. And that's type 1.
Yeah, Mackie, I was having a discussion with a friend of mine who I was explaining that even trying to go back in time, say 400 years, for instance, speaking English with that person would be a complicated issue.
It'd be easier for me than for you.
Yeah, because, I know no Latin.
No, forget Latin. German was English at the time.
Yes.
Shakespeare.
Yes.
Was a lot closer to German.
Yes.
Than it is to the English of today. So, thou hast. Hast is a German form of have, haben, right? So I could communicate with the Shakespearean English a lot better than you.
Yeah, completely. And they would have an awful time understanding our simplistic way of describing something in a sentence.
Correct. It's like, okay. Okay. What?
Yeah, what is okay?
In fact, read a novel from the Bronte sisters written about 150 years ago.
Yes.
And going from the front door to your letterbox would take like 3 pages.
That's right.
It was such a long-winded way of writing. And this is why it's hard for some in high school. I get it, right?
You read school
novels. It's just tough to get through.
But you've read Lewis and Clark's.
Yes.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's very detailed. It's I guess, superfluous, we would call it today, some of the descriptions or some of the content, right? But for them, it was very important because that's what that was their method of recording. History. We got video, we got this, we got that, right?
Yeah.
A man of little worth mention here.
That's my favorite description of a person that the author, whichever it was, Lewis or Clark, wrote about a person they hated. But they would take 5 pages to talk about cresting a hill and seeing this valley with half a million bison, right?
Yeah.
And it took 2.5 pages to do that, but that's just all that guy got. Was
it's like that's all you're getting. I hate you.
I hate you
so much. I hate you so much.
But if that to me stood out as the most pertinent way of describing their relationship with this fellow, and I thought that was tremendous.
Completely. But
their beautiful, flowery way of describing things is lost. We've pulled out of the dive into text SMSs as a language. We were going to impact the ground, and that was going to be the end of human society, right? Where everyone shortened everything down to, into three letters or four letters, ridiculously ruining English. However, I think we've pulled the stick back and we've now crested that, and I think there's at least hope for us yet.
And look, it hasn't gotten as bad as we thought it might. I agree.
But emojis have taken over from a young perspective now, and it's as a hieroglyphic language.
Very much, and just this funny meme I saw, where 5,000 years of doing this, and we've gone back to hieroglyphic, right?
That's right.
That was hilarious. It's true. Fundamentally, it's no word of a lie. And again, maybe the Egyptians were onto something then.
Maybe. Right? So I'm going to wink to the audience in the chat room. That's about, look at me using emojis. I don't use emojis. I even use full stops and double spaces after the full stop. I'm old school.
Old school. Look, I write it full sentences, full words.
Yes.
That's what I do. It's my thing.
Yeah, I don't simplify it either. No. I think some of the context is lost when you've only got a couple of hieroglyphs to explain yourself.
Yeah. But I tell you what, I see it in the way my children articulate themselves as well. I mean, the way I see it, this is now annihilated by them. And I speak in a fairly, I wouldn't say a formal fashion, but I do speak proper English to them, right? And I use words that are, maybe highbrow, but they use those words now. They're like 6, 7 years old.
Yes.
And it comes through in their schooling as well.
Yeah, likewise.
So I won't change. That's my point. I'm not going to change. I like it.
I know. I have one daughter who uses the definition of every word to point. She's on point with her use of them and will argue by utilizing those words by their definition that she's somehow negated and found a loophole.
Oh, is that right?
That's exquisite.
I think that's awesome, buddy. Oh, that's the music.
And now I think we all have to thank the Anunnaki.
I'd like to thank the leader.
I love the leader.
No, I love him more.
I love leader more.
Oh, leader.
This is all of the leaders. This has been David Mekashone. Side out. See you next week. And coming up next is Jer Bear with his awesome show After Hours. Do donate. We'll see you next week.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
We will not comply with the institution's sick illusion. No, it won't be televised. Welcome to the
Broadcasting live from the peak of Mount Warnes, the most easterly point of Australia. Tune in to the Free Manatee Radio Show with your host, Spread Love, every Monday, 6 a.m. EST. On the show each week, we discuss realistic solutions to help you observe rather than take part in the globalist agenda. We will dig into the past to find solutions for the future. We will discuss the wisdom of Ayurveda, the science of life, for techniques for understanding and achieving personal health and longevity. Please join us every Monday on Studio A, 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Free Manatee Radio broadcast with your host, Spread Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe.